Going on the theme that we had last week and continuing what we said, to say it into today, there's a Gemara in Yuma. Gemara in Yuma is on Lamed Hei Amud Beis. It's a famous Gemara that's brought down in many different places, and it's used all over. Really, the truth is, we don't have to go through the entire Gemara inside. It helps to go through it inside. We don't have to go through it inside. The Gemara says that whenever everybody goes up to Shemayim, when a person goes up after Shemayim, there's going to be excuses, and the person will come out and will say, whatever excuse comes into his head when they ask you, why didn't you learn enough Torah? Why didn't you learn Torah? So the Ani is going to get up, and the Ani is going to say that, how could I learn Torah? I didn't have enough time. I had to work for myself. I had to make money. There was nothing I could do. I didn't have the ability. That's what the Ani is going to get up and say. And the Gemara says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to answer back, Klum Ani Yisa Yosa Mihilul. Mihilul HaZakin. Were you poorer than Hilul HaZakin? Did you have less money than Hilul HaZakin did? And the Gemara goes through it and explains, what does it mean, Klum Ani Yisa Yosa Mihilul HaZakin? Hilul HaZakin, and the Gemara goes through the story, used to make one trapik per day. There was a small coin. And out of that one trapik that he made by selling firewood, he took half a trapik and he gave it to the guard of the base medrash, because in order to get to the base medrash, took half a trapik every day, and then the other half he gave to his family for whatever the family needed. But think about how little amount of money that was. The guard of the base medrash was getting half a trapik per day per guy, per person that was coming in. That was per day. That, can you imagine how little amount of money that was for the rest of his family? And we all know what happens, that Shmaya and Avtanya were giving shir, and Hillel HaZakin wanted to listen. One day he wasn't able to sell firewood for whatever reason, and that day it was unseasonably warm, but whatever happened, somebody came into the marketplace and took away his livelihood, his business, and he couldn't get in that night. And it was Friday night, and he decided, even though it was cold outside, he was going to listen into the Torah from the rooftop. So he went up on top of the roof, put his ear right by the window that was on top there, and listened in to the Torah of Shmaya and Avtalya. Three amos of snow fell on top of him, and he almost died. Shmaya and Avtalya realized it only by Vasika. When they looked up, they expected there to be light. They grabbed him down, they rubbed his body with oils, and they allowed him to be sit in front of the fire, and they saved Hillel HaZakin. They said, Roy Yizeh L'chal Lovitz HaShabbos. This person is Roy to be Machal Shabbos for. That was Hillel HaZakin. That's what it says about Ani. If a person says, Usher Yizeh, I was a rich man, right? And I didn't have time for Torah. I was so busy with everything that I was doing. I had this and that and the other to do. I was so busy. So the Gemara says, Klum Ashra Yisa Yosemite Rabbi Elazar ben Charsim. Were you richer than Rabbi Elazar ben Charsim? Rabbi Elazar ben Charsim inherited from his father 1,000 islands and 1,000 ships full of merchandise. That's what he got from his father. And even though every day he had so many busy things to do, all these things to do in business, nonetheless, he would take a bag of sack of flour, put it on his shoulder, and he'd go from city to city to learn Torah. That was Rabbi Elazar ben Charsim. One time he was caught by his own servants. Rabbi Elazar ben Charsim's servants caught Rabbi Elazar ben Charsim in the street and said to him, you have to do work for Rabbi Elazar ben Charsim. He said, please just let me go learn Torah. And they said, no, you have to do work now. This is one of the things that you do when you live in a certain land. And Rabbi Elazar ben Charsim was taken and would not say who he was. In the end, he got out of it. It was Rabbi Elazar ben Charsim. He wouldn't even say who he was. And therefore we see that even a rich person must learn Torah, no matter how much money you have, no matter how much things you have for you, you still have to learn Torah. And then the Gemara says, the last one, when the Rasha gets up, and this is the best one in my mind, the Rasha gets up and he says, how can I get over my tithes? I have so many tithes. So many things. I'm a Russian. How could I possibly learn Torah? Now, you could learn this in so many different ways. So many different ways. In the Pashup shot, I had so many taivas that I couldn't get over my taivas, so I couldn't sit down and learn because my taivas were telling me do this, that, and the other, and I just didn't have time to learn. Or the person has a psychological issue. If I'm such a Russian, what am I doing learning? My learning means absolutely nothing. What am I bothering with? I don't know what the exact time is. I'm sure it includes all of them, and that's that. At the end of the day, what happens with this guy? We say, Klum, Noha Yisa Yosef Mi Yosef. were you more beautiful than Yosef HaTzadik? So with Yosef HaTzadik, how much the woman used to chase after him, what the woman used to do in order to be somewhere near him, but just what they were willing to do to be near Yosef HaTzadik. Were you a Rasha greater than Yosef HaTzadik? Were you a Rasha, a Baal Taiva greater than Yosef HaTzadik? Were you more beautiful than Yosef HaTzadik? And yet, even though Yosef HaTzadik had all this coming after him, still he sat down and he learned Torah. Even though he had all these taivas and all these reasons in the world, his brothers sold him. He might have thought, we don't know exactly what he thought, that his father hated him. He's sitting there in a land that he had no idea what to do. He was in jail for 12 years. 12 years for this. But no, Yosef HaTzadik did not give in. So, that's what's going to happen in Shemayim. You go up to Shemayim and you say, I was such a Rasha. I had so many things on my mind. I couldn't learn Torah. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to say, oh yeah, what about Yosef HaTzadik? The question on the Gemara is so obvious. I'm not Yosef HaTzadik. I'm not Rabbi Elazar ben Charsom. I mean, you can't compare me to Hillel HaZaken. Of course they were able to learn Torah when they were unbelievably poor and unbelievably rich and unbelievably good looking. I mean, but I am not either one of those. I'm not any of those people. How do you expect that out of me? You can expect that out of somebody that's unbelievably great. But how could you expect that out of me? How could the Gemara even make such a comparison? And don't tell me every person has the ability to be like them. No way. There is no way that anyone has the ability to be Yosef HaTzadik. There's no way. We weren't born into a family of Yaakov Avinu. We don't have brothers who are the Shiftei Ka. There's no way that anyone here has the ability to be Yosef HaTzadik. The ability to be Hillel HaZaken. The ability to be Rabbi Elazar ben Charsom. We might be great, but there's no way the Gemara could actually be comparing us to them. See, here's what you should do, and here's what the Gemara does do. By Kibud Av Ve'Em. When there's Kibud Av Ve'Em, we're trying to say, here's how you should be Machaved Av Ve'Em. Who do we compare to? Who are the examples given by the Gemara as the epitome of Kibud Av Ve'Em? Dama ben Nissina. What do you know about Dama ben Nissina, guys? He's not Jewish. We're talking about a person who's not Jewish. Esau is the epitome of Kibud Av Ve'Em. And that makes sense. I can make a Kal Vachomer. If Esau, who is so evil, could be Machaved Av so well, Kol Shekein me. I'm not evil. Of course I could. If some of Benesina, who wasn't Jewish, had the ability to be have that Kibud Av, then Kol Shekein me. I should be able to do that. That makes sense. That's a Kal Vachomer. That makes sense. That's understandable. But this, how could you compare me? How could HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in the Beis Hinishomayla, at the end of days, compare me to Yosef, to Rabbi Elazar ben Charsom, to Hillel HaZaken? How is that possible? So, Rav Chaim Shmuel Levitz in Sichos Moser speaks about this, and he says an unbelievable answer, that if Torah was a mila, it was a level to attain, to gain levels and go up one by one, to get to a certain level, to get up there, then Anachanami, we're not on that level yet. And maybe eventually we will, maybe we'll build ourselves up, maybe we can get there. But right now we're not on that level, and that makes sense. That makes sense. But it's not that. Torah is our lives. Everything about us has to revolve around Torah, and we have no excuse to get out of it. What this was saying is that everyone, even the greatest Gedolim, have excuses. And you either give the excuse, and you say, here's why I didn't learn Torah, or you just say, it's just an excuse. That's not for real. I've got to sit down and I've got to really learn Torah. This week's Parsha, Kaf Alein Har Kigigis, taking the mountain of Har Sinai, putting on top of Klal Yisrael, which is unnecessary. We said Nasa once, we said Nasa again, we said Nasa Benishma the third time. Three times we told the Kadosh Baruch Hu, we're willing to accept the Torah, we're willing to do whatever you want us to do. Nasa, we'll do it. And then maybe later on we'll hear what we have to do, we'll understand the reasons behind it, maybe. But Nasa, we'll do it. We agreed. We said yes. We said we'll do it. And nonetheless, the Kadosh Baruch Hu takes the mountain and puts it over our heads. The reason why is simple. The world is dependent upon us doing it. We might say it, but until we actually do it, it means nothing. And that's Yom HaShishi. That is Tolu Bo Ad Yom Matan Torah. So we really, it's not just the acceptance. Are we willing to do it? Are we willing to go ahead and do it? Because there will be excuses. You're going to be tired one day. It's going to be too hot in the base measures. It's going to be too cold in the base measures. It's going to be too sunny in the base measures. It's not sunny enough in the base measures. It's right before vacation. It's right after vacation. It's too long before or after vacation. You're going to have every excuse you can possibly think of. And you're going to have them one after the other piling up. And it doesn't get easier. The Then soon it becomes, well, I'm going out and I can't have my head on straight. Well, after that, I'm engaged. I don't have my head on straight. Well, I'm getting married. I don't have my head on straight. After marriage, it's Shunari Shona. I don't have my head on straight. A kid or two later, I don't have my head on straight. After 12 kids within 3 years, I can't. And then I agree. If you have 12 kids in 3 years, then I agree you might not have your head on straight. Quadruplets, three, that's a lot. Then I agree that that's a little bit extreme. But once you get to a certain point, there's never going to be a time for the rest of your lives where you're going to sit there and be like, well, I've got no excuses. I'm ready to learn Torah, except for maybe when you're 95 years old and your great-grandkids are getting married, you're retired and you have an IRA and everything's taken care of and you're fine sitting in your home with three attendants because you're so wealthy, then maybe you won't have an excuse. But even then, you think you're not going to have an excuse? Not feeling so good. I'm old. That's what's going to be the excuse. There is no time in your lives that you won't be able to give an excuse. And that's what it's trying to say. You can have the best excuses in the world. Yosef had some darn good excuses. Hillel had an unbelievable excuse. Rabbi Elazar ben Karsom had an unreal excuse. 1,000 cities that he owned, 1,000 ships that he owned, that he had to take care of. And he was probably financing hundreds of yeshivas and kolos and everything else that he was doing. And nonetheless, he spent his time learning Torah because it didn't make a difference to him. And that's how we have to treat it. It's not that we're being compared to those people and what they did. We're being compared to the amount of excuses that they had versus ours. Ours is nothing in comparison to what they were complaining about. And that's the truth of what we're trying to say over here. And that's the way the rest of the Torah is. When it comes to Torah, that's how we tell you. Even the greatest people with the greatest excuses still were able to find time for Torah. You should as well. And by everything else, like Kibbutz Av Ein, we'll give you the stories of the least of the least. Don't Benesina and Asaph. How about Tzitzis? Who's the example of why we should wear Tzitzis? The guy with the Zona in Minneapolis, Duff Mendalis. We're going to the bottom level to understand, because there it's milos. Eventually it'll grow on you. You should learn how to be Machabid Av Ein. You'll learn how to put on Tzitzis. But when it comes to Torah, there's no, it's not about the milo. It's about you have to learn, period. There's nothing else to talk about. There's nothing else that goes on in your mind. It's simply put, we have to sit and learn. One of the greatest things that I'd ever seen was when the yeshiva went on a ski trip in the high school, and some of the guys in the base mentor went on the ski trip. And I went up, and I don't ski, I don't like it, it's annoying, and I know why people find it fun running down a mountain with things on your feet. I get it, but I couldn't do it. So I was sitting in the lodge, and there, sitting there, was a doctor who was there just in case something happened, because the year before something had happened, and one guy like punctured a lung or something. So there was a doctor that was there, who was sitting there, and he was there just for the day, nothing else. And he sat down, and for 4.5 hours that we were there, with a break of maybe a half an hour for lunch, he sat there with his chavrusa. He pulled in a chavrusa, who was a wealthy guy who didn't need to work, and they sat there and they learned for 4.5 hours. Okay, I didn't get permission to say their names, but they sat for 4.5 hours. This is a doctor who's been a doctor for the past 40 years. A guy who's running a business, who's been running his business and owns different nursing homes in different places for 20, 30 years, 35 years. And what were they doing? They sat down on the ski trip, not just ski. They did ski for 2 hours at the very, very end of it. The very end, they stayed for 2 hours and that's it. For 4.5 hours, they sat and they learned. They said they learned. That's it. There was nothing else to do. I mean, that's the way you're supposed to be. That's the way you grow up and you say, this is what I'm supposed to do with my life. The truth is, there really are no excuses at all. I don't care how little money you have. I don't care how busy you are. But I want to go into this a little bit. How big of a Russia you are. I would love to see the guy who can go up to a Kaddish Baruch Hu and say, well, you made me too good looking. I would love to watch that guy. I hope I'm in that. I get to be there at that time when a guy goes up. You made me too good looking, God. It's just not my fault. Unbelievable. Absolutely unbelievable. I can't imagine saying that to anyone, let alone to a Kaddish Baruch Hu at the end of days when he asks me why I didn't learn enough. And I say, fuck, that's just so good looking. But let's take this down a notch a little bit. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I was busy. I was really into the Bears. Really into the Bears. And I couldn't learn on Sunday mornings or early afternoon because I had to watch the Bears game. How sad and pathetic of an excuse is that? How sad is that? Or a Bulls game. Or a Blackhawks playoff game because nobody's watching before then. Right? Or eventually in 2016, depending, the Cubs and the White Sox. How sad and pathetic is something like that? HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I couldn't learn. There was too many sports for me to watch. That's just sad. That's just pathetic. And let's take it out of the realm of sports, because I know not everybody's in the realm of sports. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I had to go shopping. I had to buy a new shirt. And therefore, because of that, I had to go. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, you didn't have enough shirts? I'm so sorry, what happened? No. I had plenty of shirts. But there was a blue shirt that I wanted. It was a blue shirt. Was it a nice blue shirt? It was a really nice blue shirt. Wow. And you were putter. You were putter. There's nothing you can do about that. There's nothing you can do. I mean, how sad and pathetic is that? How sad and pathetic is it when you say, well, I need so badly to go get something to eat or something to drink in order to make it through. You really couldn't make it 3 hours without food or drink? No, could not do it. It was impossible. 3 hours. You can't do 3 hours without that cheese Danish. You really need that cheese Danish. Or that, I don't know, coffee, mocha, latte, frappa, something or other that you have to get, right? Do you really, really need it? Yeah. Or in recent memory, just anything. Anything. You really, really needed it? And if you did need it, how did you go to get it? Was it like this? Or did you beeline to go grab it from the machine, beeline back, and get back to your seat within 2.5 minutes? How do you walk when it comes to going outside and coming back? When you're going from someplace, from seat or that, how do you walk to go to the bathroom? Do you go to the bathroom and you're just like sitting around, and you're chilling out a little bit, checking out the Mishnayos list, and going around and seeing where your seat would be? If you were here, I would have taken that seat. Is that what you're doing? Or are you going and you're standing around? This is not a coffee break. This is not like you're at work and you're sitting by the little, I don't know, by the little, the water thing, and you're just the water cooler, and you're like, so what did you see last night? This is not what you're doing here. This is no longer your world. This world should never have been your world. See, that's where you're at. You have an unbelievable opportunity in front of you. An unbelievable opportunity. I'm not just talking about sitting and learning and being in Seder. Saying there's a break for 1 week in the middle of Zman, and that's an impossibility to really get yourself back into it or get yourself into it when it's toward the end. Half of us have already gone to Israel and we're already in our existence. All minds are already on what I'm going to do over vacation or what's going to be during that time. It's hard. But here's what you can do with a vacation. And here's what you can really do. Find something that you like and do it. Find something that you would do even when you're on vacation. Because if I would tell you I want you guys to chazer during vacation, I highly doubt most people here would chazer. Because maybe I'll get one or two guys who will say, like, yeah, you're right, I really should chazer to go over everything, and maybe I'll get that. But I'm not expecting that. That would be a Hillel level, or a Rabbi Yosef ben Karsim level, or a Yosef Atzadik level. But there's got to be something. Get something for yourself. There's got to be something that you can acquire for yourself. For example, even when I'm not in the mood, even when everything else is just, and I don't have any time and nothing's there, I have my Bikias. I love going through Bikias. I love going through a certain amount of Dafim every day, and I love doing it. So meaning, even when there's no time, even when I sit there and I have to miss the Seder because something else happens, like I have to pick up breakfast or something, I have no excuse. It doesn't matter. Eventually I'm going to make it up. Because if I like it so much, and that's my accomplishment, that's what I do, this is my Torah, then I won't give that up. I'm not going to give that up. If a person loves it so much, then it's theirs. They're going to do it even on vacation. And they'll say to themselves, not, oh man, there's an excuse that I don't have time to learn today. I only have 14 and a half waking hours, and 13 hours and 45 minutes of it is spent doing crazy good things out there, and I only have 45 minutes to daven. I guess there's no time for me to learn. It's not like that. It's, no, I have something that I absolutely must do. Let me work my entire schedule of the day around it so that I can do it. And if that means you got to wake up at 6:45 in order to go to a 6:45 minyan so that you can learn after davening, then you do it. If that means that you have to go to sleep a little bit later in order to make sure that you get your Seder in because you forgot to or you weren't able to do it during the day, then you'll do it. Not because you feel like you have to, because you want to. This is my thing. See, there are people here that are really into, for example, and it was a brilliant call by this guy, to go through the Medrash Says and just be able to know everything it says inside it. No need to look, but there's an idea of going through something and taking it, and this is yours. That means that if you like it so much and you're going through it and you're understanding it, that means it's always going to be yours. You can do that with Mishnayos. You can do that with Shnai Mikravat HaTargum. You can do it with Rashi Ramban in the Chumash. You can do it with anything. But you've got to pick something. If you don't have something yet, then of course you're not going to learn when you're on vacation. What's going to force you to get up? What's going to force you to do anything? Nobody. Nobody's there. There's no longer me slapping you in the face. There's no longer my brother jumping on you. There's no longer the guilt trips that somebody's sending you on a phone, except maybe me and Rabbi Sheinfeld will still send you guilt trips on the phone. Maybe that'll be there. It's not like that. Vacation is for you to figure out what you're going to do and have something. Grab something for yourself. I don't care if you're getting married during this vacation. You better have a set Seder every single day. You hear me, though? You better have that ready for yourself and get it down and have something set, absolutely set, so that you know absolutely this is my Seder. This is what I do. Even if it's just to Hillel, so to speak, just to Hillel. Aruch HaShulchan, Shulchan Aruch, Rambam, anything. But that's got to be yours. Make it a Kenyan and mean it. Take it for yourself and figure out what it is now, so that when you come down to it, it's not just you jump into it when you're on vacation. There should be something that is absolutely yours. Absolutely yours. We ask every day, the same call came to the source of. Give us our chelik in Torah. Mean it. Mean it. Everyone has a chelik. Everyone here does. You just got to find what it is. Last one, Tu B'Shvat is coming up. Tu B'Shvat is a chag known for Kiddushei Torah. And I know they say it's a chag for the trees. I'm not a tree. I'm not a fruit. For the life of me, I think not. And vegetables or anything like that. So what's Tu B'Shvat for us? Tu B'Shvat is the time when the sap goes inside the trees and makes the fruit grow. You're not going to see any fruits, not in Chicago, during Tu B'Shvat. Even in Eretz Yisrael, it's difficult to find fruit on Tu B'Shvat. But this is the time when the sap goes through and the beginning starts. This is the beginning of a Zman. It's the beginning of a brand new Zman that goes all the way up until Pesach. Start learning. Start finding something that's yours. Start allowing for the sap to come through your system so that you understand what you're doing with it. Don't waste it. Find something that you could be Kone and grab that for yourself. And if you do, then you're like Hillel Azok. You're like Rabbi Elazar ben Charsam. You're like Yosef Atzadik, in the sense that you have no excuse. You have none. And you know it. That's the way to be able to be.